there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is.
We're going to talk about a mountain climber from Naperville, Illinois. He did something that, Bill, you and I will never, ever do. Mm-mm. He has just trekked up Mount Everest. Welcome, Rick Poole. Rick, thank you so much for coming up here.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You just did it in May.
May 23rd.
Your first time climbing Mount Everest, and as you've told Wendy and myself, your only time climbing Mount Everest. You're not going back.
Well, you're the one who said, oh, are you going to do it again?
Well, you tell us. Why won and out?
There is a 0% chance I'm going to do that
really?
Again. So, partially because I successfully summited.
Yeah.
So, unless someone's going to pay me a whole heap of money, why would I go back and do
right.
it again?
Yeah, you've accomplished it.
But two, I mean, I was gone for 66 days. And that is a lengthy journey, regardless of what you're doing. And climbing Everest was obviously something I did voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
But not every one of those 66 days is comfortable. I mean, it's a really difficult thing to do.
Right.
And for those reasons.
Wait, I can't even like wrap my head around this. So you decide, okay, you've been climbing other mountains before, and you're like, yep. I need to conquer Mount Everest.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ultimate challenge for a mountain climber.
I don't know. It was for me. I mean, there are other mountains that are more dangerous.
Yeah.
So there's a K2, which the death rate is 25%, and Annapurna, where it's 33%.
It's 2% on Mount Everest?
It's 2%. 2.4 was the last number that I saw.
Yeah.
Just hearing the word death rate would make me not want to do it.
Well, and you're not alone. This is not everybody's calling.
Right.
This is pretty unique. I didn't ask for it either, by the way.
Yeah.
I would much rather have God gave me a greater interest in checkers, chess, playing the piano, but I got stuck with mountain climbing, and it wasn't something that happened in a flash. There was no bolt of lightning that said, you have to go do this. I was just messing around in Colorado with my buddies.
Yeah.
And we were climbing out there for a couple of years, and I realized just how much I love being in the mountains. And as I tend to do, I have this itch I can't quite seem to scratch, where yeah. no matter what I'm doing, I ask myself, like, how big can I make this?
Yeah.
Like, what's the next thing I could do? And it finally occurred to me when I really mapped it out that for me, the biggest I could make it, which is the highest point on the planet, was let's go summit Everest. And so I mapped it out. It was an 8-step process from where I was.
8-step process.
Yeah, some in Colorado, and then there was definitely some hoops to jump through to be trained, you know, technically, to how do I climb a big mountain. And I said, well, that's a long list of stuff right there. I'll just do the first one. If I don't like it, then I'm going to stop.
How much bigger is Mount Everest than the next highest mountain you had climbed?
So the highest I'd been before Everest was I climbed Aconcagua in early 2017. That's the highest peak in South America. Say that 10 times real fast.
I just was wondering if I had to hit the dump button on that. I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, I just swore in a foreign language. No, it's Aconcagua. That was 22,800 feet.
All right, and
so is
Everest?
Two-thirds of the size of Mount Everest?
Everest at the top is 29,029 feet.
Yeah.
So a difference of about 7,000 feet.
Significantly taller.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a whole different project.
And you had said this off the air, but you have to train for this. This isn't just something like, oh, I climbed a mountain, so now I'm going to conquer Everest.
No, not at all. And in fact, you know, everybody heard all of the news stories that happened this year, which
yes.
is, you know, probably part of the reason that got me into this beautiful room that you have here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I had to not only mess around in Colorado. Step one in that 8-step plan was I went to an 8-day mountain climbing course with Alpine Ascents International out in that's in Washington State, and that was a rigorous training. I mean, you could climb that mountain in 2 days. So we were there for 8, you know, learning how to rope, learning how to self arrest, learning how to pace yourself, learning how to set up camp on a glacier, and all sorts of technical aspects of climbing a big mountain. Yeah, and then from there I went on and climbed Aconcagua, which was a month-long journey,
mm-hmm.
and which was really, really cool. It was my first experience, you know, on a month-long expedition.
Mm-hmm.
And then climbed a couple of volcanoes in Mexico, which I cannot pronounce the name of because they have like 21 letters and 6 X's.
Oh, right. That's fine.
But they're the 3rd and 5th highest peak in North America.
Yeah.
Itza and Orizaba is the shortened name. And then last summer, I did Denali, which is the highest peak in North America.
Are there any points during these climbs where you say to yourself, I have bitten off more than I can chew?
Once.
I can't go on. Yeah? What happened there?
Well, so I had a rule before I went, and I was willing to accept 1% of risk. So I knew, no matter what, that there was going to be risk on Everest.
Yeah.
And I was willing to accept a 1% chance that I might not come home in order to get to the top of the world. But no more.
You really thought in your head for a minute there is a very slight chance, but I may not come home. Did you really, truly believe that?
Yeah, you have to. If you don't believe that going to Everest, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah.
That's just a silly
thing. Then why would you go?
I was willing to accept 1% to do it.
Wow.
Not more than 1%.
You trust yourself very much.
It's not just me, and I did, but I went with an amazing group. I mean, we had some of the best guides in the world, and we had 1-to-1 Sherpa ratio on summit day. Like, so many of the stories that we read about here in the States, like, I can tell you firsthand how to minimize some of them. However, regardless of how prepared you are or how prepared your team is, there are things outside of your control, right? So each time we went through the Khumbu Icefall, for example, which I kind of enjoyed, and the Khumbu Icefall is bananas. Picture 1,000 blocks of ice the size of your average house, sprinkled about for 2 miles up the mountain. And you're going under and over and through. And these are the pictures of the ladders you see that scare everybody to death.
Yeah.
And, you know, each time I went through that, I never once felt like I was in danger. There were some moments that were scary. You know, some of those ladders, I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to do that.
Right.
But you do it.
Right.
But I was kidding myself. At any point, one of these big blocks of ice could fall off the side of the mountain. And if it's your day, it's your day. And that's what happened in 2014. Jeez. Killed 14 Sherpa. All in one swoop. So, but to answer your question, I had a promise with myself that if at any point in this venture I felt like my life was in danger, I would turn around and come home because it's not worth not seeing my girls again and my family.
Right.
And I broke that rule. And when I broke it, there was nowhere else for me to go. I was on my way down. And I was on my way down. It started snowing really hard. I was still at 29,000 feet when it happened. And right after the summit of Everest, which is, by the way, a pretty cool spot to hang out. Mm-hmm.
How long did you get to stay up at the top? I know you did a selfie and you need pictures.
Yeah, you got to do that because you're not going back up there to grab something. Yeah, I left my glasses behind. I'm not going to get them. I was up there for about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But just by myself, there were other people around, but nobody else was on the summit at the time. Everyone, I guess, had already taken their picture. And so I got to sit on top of the world for about 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
But you can't even feel the accomplishment because you still have the trek down. So you can't. It's no victory lap once you're up there.
It's not as big a victory lap as I would have thought, just for that reason. However, it still felt
it's
pretty good.
It's still pretty good to be up there. Sure,
yeah.
Of course.
I mean, because I felt pretty good at the time.
Right.
My Sherpa was right there with me.
Right.
You know, we were doing some high-fiving. And I'd made myself a list of things to do on the summit just in case I was a little delirious when I got there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And altitude sickness, they talk about that. That's a possibility.
It is. And we saw a lot of that. So I just didn't want to forget. And the very first thing, so I broke out the Ziploc bag of stuff. And I had a list on it. The very first thing on the list in big print was, enjoy this for yourself. And so I get to sit there and, like, that's good advice. I'm just going to take it all in for a few minutes.
More question. So you said you made it up there and you didn't enjoy it probably as much as you should have because you still had to think about coming down. Is going up the same amount of danger and difficulty as coming down?
No. Coming down is way harder.
Isn't it really?
So, yeah, it is. And for a number of reasons I fully understand, even before I went to Everest, is the whole time you're on any one of these big peaks, it doesn't even have to be a big peak. It could be a small peak. It doesn't matter. The whole time you're going up, you're thinking, I can't wait to see what it's like up there.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge emotional drain when you go and you get that done and it's like, yeah. And then they're like, yeah, we have to go back down. I'm like, there's no elevator. There's no escalator.
Yeah.
And so you're emotionally deflated and you don't realize sometimes just how much energy you consumed getting up there. And so, for example, this year, 90% of the deaths were on the way down.
God, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Here's a question that I already know the answer to. If you had the option, you get to the top, you get to the summit, and there is an elevator down, you can either take the elevator or you could climb down. Which would you choose?
Elevator.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't count. You have to climb back down, or they don't count your summit.
Ah, crazy rules. Rick Poole is here. He has been to the top of Mount Everest and back. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. We are just being amazed by Rick Poole, a mountain climber. You're from Naperville. There are no mountains that high in Naperville, are there?
No.
Mount Prospect is close. Have you ever thought about climbing Mount Prospect?
That would be great, actually, to add to the list. Yes. Denali, Aconcagua, Everest, Mount Prospect.
Very impressive.
Now, Rick is here because he just climbed Mount Everest on May 23rd of this year. Someone said I interrupted you. So will you finish telling your story about you breaking the rule where if you thought you were in any danger, you would turn around? It was on your way down, though, right?
Yeah, it was on the way down, which is usually where these things happen. And, you know, I mentioned I was willing to accept 1%. And, you know, what are the chances that happens?
Mm-hmm.
1%.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran smack into it. So we got up to the summit late because of all the crowds that we all, you know, read and heard about. And so instead of getting up there at 8 o'clock in the morning when it's still really beautiful and blue skies, we got up there 10:45. And so after my 10 minutes, my Sherpa gave me the high sign, like, we got to go, because it started snowing. And by the time I got to the top of the Hillary Step, it was snowing very hard. And the goggles I have, they open just a crack, just so they don't fog up. And in the time I walked from the summit to the top of the Hillary Step, so much snow had gotten in there that I couldn't see anymore. And when you're standing at the top of the Hillary Step, it's about 40 feet straight down. I mean, it's a really vertical section. And I couldn't see. My Sherpa had already kind of gone off the first step. So he was close by, but I couldn't see him. And there was a man had fallen down the Hillary Step the day before, and his body is at the base of the Hillary Step. And we walked by it on the way up.
They just leave bodies there like we've read.
Yes, they're going to leave Mr. Cash where he is. Mm. That's who that is. Don Cash was the first American climber, and he's at almost 29,000 feet. So they're not going to be bringing his body down. It's too high. And so anyway, for all of these different reasons, I froze. I panicked. I hyperventilated. I couldn't breathe. And it was a terrifying moment. And right in the middle of all that, the people behind me, because there's still folks coming down.
Yeah.
We're very vocal about the fact that I can't stop there. And they're right. I can't stop there because we're all in a storm and we all have to get down the mountain. I can't afford my panic attack. And so, it was absolutely terrifying. And I took the step and hoped for the best.
Oh, my God.
Full well, if I didn't hit the right place, that I was probably staying there.
So what kind of rebound time do you have when something, I mean, that's as life and death can be. Do you get over that in minutes, weeks, months, years? How do you?
I'm not over it as I sit here and talk to you.
No, probably not.
But at the time, I had no choice. I mean, so I staggered down, you know, moving like a baby deer. Thankfully, yeah. Ang Nuru, nicknamed Robbie, my Sherpa, was right there. And he kind of grabbed my arm and looked at me like, you know, you all right, dude?
Yeah.
He moved my clip for me and, you know, we went down the mountain together and it never stopped snowing the whole way, and I never got to see any better. And, you know, if he wasn't there,
right,
that would have been, at a minimum, a much longer day. And at a maximum, I might not have made it back to Camp 4 without him.
Are you allowed to make the climb without a guide or a Sherpa? Or
sure.
You are allowed to.
You could pay the $11,000 climbing fee and do it in a pair of shorts and flip-flops if you want.
Yeah.
Okay, so $11,000 is what you need to pay to them to climb Mount Everest, but then your transportation and training is all additional, correct?
Yeah, so $11,000 is what the Nepal government's going to demand. So that was part of the fee I paid. So I paid a $70,000 fee to go do this. And that's without the flights, and that's without the hotels, and so it ends up being more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But, there are groups that do it for half that. And this
you don't want a cut-rate group on
this. This is not one of the things that you want to cut. That's exactly right. Like, you don't shop for discount LASIK, I don't think, right?
Right.
I mean, there's some things that just, I don't care. I don't want the discount. But people do it, and they cause, there's some people who shouldn't have been there.
So we saw those lines of people waiting to go up the mountain. It almost looks like a tourist attraction, like you're waiting in line for a ride at Disney. But you're climbing as you're in that line of people?
Yeah. So, you know, the picture that became famous was from May 22nd. It was the day before I went. Our day looked not as crowded, but still there was a lot of people. And what ends up happening is there's one rope. So once you get above the south summit, which is at 28,000 feet, that last journey is not only technical, is there's one rope, and people are going up and coming down. And so that ridge line is, if you step a couple feet to the right, you're dropping 12,000 feet into Tibet. If you step a couple feet to your left, you're dropping 8,000 feet down back into Nepal. So it's a pretty intimidating area to be, period. But then you throw two-way traffic and climbers who are slowing down big time. Yeah, there are moments that are a little uncomfortable up there.
Because you could essentially be responsible for not only your own death, but a wrong move could cost somebody else their life as well. Right?
Yeah, it could.
Yeah. Like a domino thing? If you fall or something, could you...
Yeah, we're not roped together, so if you fall, you're probably falling on your own.
Yeah.
But what ends up happening is, at the top of Everest, is it's such a narrow path, is when somebody is really struggling, everyone behind them is going slower.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't surprise you to know that being above 26,000 feet, physiologically, even with oxygen on, is really difficult. And so instead of being above 26,000 feet for 10 to 12 hours, I was above 26,000 feet for 17 hours.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, it was hard.
Right.
And I can't imagine, you know, anyone who wasn't in that, you know, kind of shape, because I trained pretty hard for it.
Yeah.
You know, slows down. And once you slow down up there, if you feel like sitting down, taking a nap, that's
not going to work.
No, that's not going to work.
And you go up the same way you come down. It's not like you go up one side of Mount Everest and then come down the other side. It's like, as you mentioned, two-way traffic.
It's two-way traffic.
Did you have to step over dead bodies? Did you see them? Was that for real right there? That's what we've read also.
Yeah, so this was the part of the journey that wasn't in the brochure that I could not possibly have anticipated this part of it.
Yeah.
Like the storm on the way down, there was a chance, and that happened. But, yeah, from going up to Camp 4.
Wait, Rick, I hate to sound, this will sound like a stereotypical cliffhanging ending, but we're out of regular time on the show.
Huh.
Are you okay to stick around? We'll do the bonus hour. If you can stick, we would love to hear more. Are you good with that for a little bit?
I'm good with that. Yeah, I'm okay.
All right.
That is the best tease you have ever done in all the years I've worked with
as
you.
As unintentional as can be. We're just out of time, and I don't want to miss any of the stories.
Yeah.
So we'll bring this over to the stream for the bonus hour. Rick will join us, and we'll tell more about his climbing of Mount Everest.
Welcome to the bonus hour. I have to tell you, Bill, a lot of times we do a radio tease to get listeners to follow us from 7:20 a.m.
Sure.
to the stream.
Yep.
But we were in suspense, too, and we need to find out more. Rick Poole is with us. He has made the trip from Naperville to Mount Everest, up and then back down, and you have lived to tell about it. And I don't mean that to be funny. You live to tell about it.
Well, that was the plan. It only counts if you come home.
Yeah, I guess so.
And that was the mindset that I went with.
Yeah.
But
we were talking to you on 7:20 a.m. about, did you see dead bodies? I don't remember where exactly we left off, but it was not pretty, was it?
No, this was a moment on the mountain that I could not have possibly predicted. I mean, weather happens, scary moments happen. I fell into a crevasse on the way down. That happened. So, I mean, all these things, you kind of, okay, that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of death that we ended up seeing firsthand, I don't know. I don't know what to do with that. I didn't know what to do with it at the time. And so when we went from Camp 3 to Camp 4, which is an eight-hour, you know, reasonably difficult journey, as we're passing the Lhotse camp, which is kind of halfway to Camp 4, for those climbing Lhotse Mountain, fourth highest peak on the planet. Right beside the trail, just a couple feet off the trail, was a Russian climber who had died a couple days prior.
Mm-hmm.
Just laying right there. How do you process that? I don't know. That's the first, outside of a funeral, I've never seen someone dead.
It's not human nature to climb over a dead person. You've been taught, or your instinct is to help them or move the body or something, but that's not the case.
There's absolutely nothing, you know, we could do for him. He's gone.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he's right there as a stark reminder that, hey, by the way, if you mess this up, right, this is going to be you. So we get up to Camp 4 and we rest for about 9 hours, and we're up again and we're going to the summit. And so we left Camp 4 at midnight. And so this is May 23rd now. May 22nd was the day everybody heard about and all the lines, and I think four people died on the 22nd alone. And so the first 30 minutes of the walk on summit day of Everest is really pretty simple. It's not that steep. It's not technical. You're just kind of walking up to the triangular face of Everest itself. And even before we get there, there's dead body, you know, number two, just laying to the right of the trail. A couple of his friends were taking him down. I assume they were his friends.
Mm-hmm.
So they will allow you to try and take your loved one down, but they will not do anything with a recovery effort, correct?
No, they will, and they did afterwards. And there's a rescue Sherpa team also. It's just a very difficult thing to do. So, yeah, there's no rules on what you can and can't do. If you know someone who's struggling or has passed away, you can try to do whatever you want.
But aren't there ladders and ropes that would make it nearly impossible to transport a body downward or no?
No, it depends on where you are. So as I tell this story, you'll kind of get it. So, you know, the first 5 hours of hiking on Summit Day is pretty straightforward. It's not overly difficult. It gets a little steep, but it's kind of a straight shot up to this thing they call the balcony. And so after we saw that body, 30 minutes in, we hiked for another hour and a half or so. And here's dead body number three, this one in the middle of the trail. And so I was told it was a woman. I don't know, because everybody's still geared up.
Yeah.
So you're not really seeing much, but, you know, there they are still geared up. But she was upside down, tangled a little bit in the rope. And in order to get around her, you literally had to unclip from the rope, step over her exposed hand, step in between kind of her knees, clip back in, and then keep going. Which, not that the other two weren't rough enough, but that one is...
Sure.
You know, so at this point, I'm kind of thinking to myself, like, what is going on up here? It was really disconcerting to be that up close and personal in this, and it just kept happening. I mean, just before we got to the balcony, there was another body off to the right, and then just before we ascend the Hillary Step is where Don Cash lies, 54-year-old American climber from Utah. I didn't know it was him at the time. I was told later. So, you know, plus there was two additional folks who were really struggling on our day who passed away later that same day. And, you know, that's an awful lot of death to be exposed to. And it's hard to see that without questioning your own mortality, number one. And two, just the wisdom and morality of what the heck you're doing. Like, is everything that we're not at war. We all came here voluntarily.
Right.
And yet, everything that we experienced on the way up was really, really hard. And I still haven't processed all of that.
Rick, the reason this was one of the more deadly seasons for Mount Everest was that the window of climbing was so much shorter. The weather kind of allows for a certain window to climb that mountain, and it was shorter this year, right?
That is correct. So it was really a three-day window this year. It was May 21-23 is where the jet stream moved off of Everest.
Yeah.
And it just forced everyone on the mountain to be up there, you know, in a very small window, which is why those 3 days were so busy. If we had done this in 2018, there was an 11-day stretch, consecutive days of pick your day, weather's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And they experienced, you know, very little, if any, of what we saw this year in 2018, which, you know, it's still a dangerous place, but they didn't experience the crowding that we had this year.
In some ways, does that make the story more exciting to tell? I know that sounds crazy, but you were there on the year, the most dangerous year. Does that intensify the story?
Of course.
It does.
You know, it's media attention, which is, you know, what we're doing here. And, you know, people died. That tends to attract the media. So there was a lot more attention. When I got home, I realized how big of a story it was.
We were all talking about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
Yeah, I mean, I knew what the news was. I knew it wasn't great because I was there.
Yeah.
And then as I started coming home and getting into civilization, realizing, my goodness, this headline's everywhere.
Right.
And then, yeah, getting some of the media outlets reaching out, wanting to talk and discuss it. And many of my fellow climbers, there were 11 of us on the team.
Yeah.
Everybody went back to their respective towns and ended up in their own newspaper or, you know, on a show of some sort.
Sure.
And, this question comes up again and again and again, because there's also a lot of misinformation about how all that happened. You know, are they issuing too many permits?
Well, what are your thoughts? What are some of the stories you read or heard in the media that you can disprove?
Well, one of them is that the problem was they're letting too many people on the mountain. That seemed to be a common theme of a lot of the stories. And It was a record-setting year for the number of permits at 381, but last year was 377. So there was no more people on the mountain this year than any other year. The difference was what Bill pointed out earlier is this small weather window. And then there was a lot of talk about the amount of trash and the number of bodies. And with the exception of Camp 4, I mean, there's some trash here and there, but I didn't see a lot of that.
Yeah.
I think some of those stories come from the north side. Camp 4 can definitely be cleaned up.
Yeah.
But that's tough to do because it's at 26,000 feet.
Yeah, who's going to want to go there with a garbage, that little poker, and start picking up garbage?
Well, it's tough to do, right? So they just actually sent a team of Sherpa up there. This is 5 days ago now. And they brought down, I forget how many tons of garbage, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought down 3 or 4 bodies as well.
Mm.
So they can, up to a certain point, bring some of these things down. So it's not just because they're letting too many people go.
Yeah.
Is why it happened.
You said a team of 11. Do most people have teams? I didn't realize. I thought this was something you did on your own.
Definitely not on my own. There's not a chance I'd make this on my own.
No.
Some people do it on their own, who are far more skilled than I. But a vast majority of the folks on the mountain do have a team. A vast majority do hire a guide of some sort. I wish more people had one-on-one Sherpa help on summit day.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably, over time, cut down on some of this, you know, injury and death that we hear about.
Right.
Because, again, Ang Nuru, my Sherpa, he saved my bacon on the way down a couple of times.
Yeah.
It was his 5th summit, and he's highly experienced on the mountain. But
why does he keep going back? I know he gets paid for it, but
yeah,
that has to be
it. Yeah, money. It's money. So when you're there, you know, my wife.
But if you die, you can't spend it.
Nope. And this is actually so it's money is why they do it. There's not much in the way of an economy in the Khumbu Valley.
Right.
You know, the trekkers and the climbers are the economy.
We are
definitely number one.
Yeah.
And so the climbing Sherpa can make $5,000 to $10,000 in a season doing this. And so, yeah, it's money.
Yeah.
And which, you know, enters a whole nother door of controversy is, you know, if I didn't go, would Robbie be there climbing this mountain? Did I put his life at risk in order to do this?
Right.
And it's kind of hard to look at that and say, no.
But how else would he have made money?
Because I did. Well, he would have been there anyway, even if I didn't go.
See what
but
you're
I mean,
saying.
If we all decided we're not going to do this
because
it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because more than half the deaths end up being the Sherpa because they go up and down the mountain. So many more times than we do.
Right.
But yeah, it's money is the short answer to that question.
You have to check in with your insurance carrier before a climb like this?
I did check on my life insurance.
Because will they insure you for this?
No.
They won't, will they?
No,
because it's voluntary?
The existing policies would pay because I've owned them long enough.
Yeah.
However, I tried to get an additional insurance sum to go to Everest, and they said absolutely not.
What a great question, Bill. Always thinking of the money.
Well, I play ping pong, so I know.
I can see how that would relate, yeah.
So, all right, May 23rd, I'm just realizing this wasn't even a month ago. I mean, aren't you still, like, recovering?
Well, yeah, I lost 23 pounds doing this. I've gained a few of them back, which has been really enjoyable.
I bet it is.
But I'm back. Oh, I've recovered 16 of the 23 pounds I've lost.
Yeah.
So I'm getting back to normal.
Do you have nightmares about it at all?
No. No, I don't have nightmares. You know, again, 66-day journey. I was sick for 3 of them, which is no bueno, because I was sick above base camp, which is even worse.
Yeah.
So that didn't feel so good. But
that's
everybody.
An altitude sickness? Is that what it is, or it's beyond that?
Altitude doesn't help, but it's beyond that.
Yeah.
I had the 1-2 of flu-like symptoms and intestinal distress together.
Oh, great.
What a great place to get it.
A lot of fun. Yeah, a lot of fun. With no indoor plumbing. Good times.
Oh, no.
So those 3 days weren't so enjoyable. However, and then, you know, summit day, there were parts of that were not so great. But the other 62 days are spectacular. I mean, it's a truly amazing place to hang out.
Did you see, there was a documentary last year, Free Solo. Did you see it?
I did.
All right. So in it, remind me, because I only remember little bits, Alex Hanold is the man's name.
Mm-hmm.
They studied his brain. They did a brainwave thing, and they couldn't find fear sensors in his brain. They existed,
right,
but they couldn't find them.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? You've shown us that there were moments that you were very afraid, but how do some people not have that?
I have no idea. I watched that movie several times. We all did.
Yeah.
And I was probably more nervous watching the movie than Alex was doing it. I have no clue how someone does something like that.
Yeah.
Unroped, up El Capitan, and at no time anywhere in my journey was I anywhere close to that type of danger.
Yeah.
I mean, very rarely were we even going vertical. So I don't know how he does that.
Right.
And I can tell you, at least every climber that I was hanging out with, we do have an active fear chip.
Yeah.
Because we would talk about it on the few days where you're doing something above and beyond, a little more interesting than it should have been.
Yeah.
Like sometimes through the ice fall. Like, did you see that ladder? Yeah, thing was tilted at like a 15-degree angle. Scared the heck out of me.
God.
You know, we all have to go across it anyway. So I don't know.
What are you afraid of? If not something like this, what irrational fear do you have?
As it relates to the mountain or just in general?
Just in general. Is there something that you shouldn't be afraid of that you are afraid of?
I'm not a fan of spiders, and there's a couple right outside your window.
I know, they are. They swing themselves up here 18 floors. I don't know how they do that.
That's a good question. I don't know. Nothing immediately comes to mind, and believe me, I keep trying to find it.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting, though, that that's a challenge for you, is there must be something that scares me. What is it? I got to find it.
Well,
why do you have to find it?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to push anymore to find it. I've gone, you know, I think as far as I'm willing to go. I can verify that I am scared of dying.
Yeah.
I came close enough to that to realize that's pretty big fear of mine, but I think that's everyone who can hear our voices.
Yeah.
Outside of that, spiders truly not big fan, so that's kind of freaking me out over
there. You've got kids. If one of your kids said, hey, I want to do what you did, I'm going to climb that same mountain, what would you say?
We'd have a lengthy talk. That would not be a quick yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would say immediately no, because some of what I experienced was really unique to this year. However, there'd be quite a conversation around that and some rules. I think I would probably ultimately end up saying okay.
Yeah.
If the proper training, if you go to these mountains, if you hire one of these groups to guide you,
yeah,
then probably.
Yeah. Wow.
We've got Rick Poole in the studio with us. He lives in Naperville, and less than a month ago, on May 23rd, he climbed Mount Everest and lived to tell about it. What could you possibly do next to top this? I mean, you must not have any goals, because what else could you do that's better than this?
I don't know. I don't want to top this. I think for a long period of time, for the last 15 years, I seem to have had this itch that I just can't quite scratch. And it all started in 2003. A really good friend of mine, Brian Hansen, said, hey, I'm going to go run the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, Brian was 180 pounds of muscle tucked into a 250-pound body, so I didn't think he was going to make it.
Yeah.
He did. I did it with him. And it kind of launched from there. So we went through the whole running series, and it was triathlons for a long time. And then it was adventure racing, and ultimately, you know, mountains. It led ultimately to the top of the world. And for the first time in that entire journey, at least as I sit here and talk to you, I'm not itchy.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. It satisfied that itch. Someone has texted in and wants to know, you said you spent above like $70,000 to do this. What do you do as your day job that allowed you to afford this, or did you save for this for years and years?
Well, some of both, but I'm in the financial services industry, and I've been in it for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been here in Chicagoland doing it since 1996,
mm-hmm.
which when you're in sales and you call on the same set of clientele for a really long period of time, that tends to work out okay.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do for a living, to answer that caller's questions.
And that's your choice. I mean, how people spend their money. Some people want to go take, 20 vacations. You kind of saved it up for this big thing.
Yeah, so no one in my family is allowed to take a vacation for the rest of their lives. Like, that's it. We've blown the budget.
Rick, have you sat in a bar where there's a guy bragging about going 4-for-4 in a softball game, and then another guy goes, I just won a badminton tournament, and you go, guys, I don't want to interrupt, but I just got back from Mount Everest. I went to the top and back. Has that happened yet?
No, that has not happened. Although, we have a joke that started in base camp, just between the climbers, that I've actually taken back home, which is you bring something up and I find a way immediately to turn it into the fact that I summited Everest.
Yeah.
Oh, those flowers are beautiful. They sure are. Very colorful. It reminds me of the prayer flags on top of Everest.
I love it.
But no, not in public. I do it with these guys.
Privately, sure.
Privately. Yeah.
Kim Gordon has walked into the studio because she does news for us. And then on the Rokan show this afternoon, Kim, this is Rick Poole
nice
from
to
Naperville to Mount Everest. He did it
so
last
cool.
month.
Wow.
Any desire to do it, Kim?
None. And yeah. I love outdoors and I love to hike and bike and ski and
but
golf.
But this is a whole other animal.
No. I don't think I'm cut out for it.
Would you do a book? Have you thought about writing a book?
About, I've been asked that. I'm like, yeah. It'd be like 8 pages. What am I going to write about?
Oh, baloney. You spent a lot of time talking to us. These are all things we want to know. We want to experience it through you because we'll never do it. What's the percentage of people that climb Mount Everest?
Well, 5,000 people have done it, right?
5,000 roughly, yeah. Divided by 7.5 billion, so not.
So you're pretty special.
Pretty, yeah. That's what I keep telling myself.
What does this group over here think?
Yeah, I'm special. Yeah, Regan's just asleep.
Rick's family is here. Your two daughters and your wife. Mm-hmm. Do they climb at all?
Yeah, they do. So Sydney, my oldest over there, 16, she hiked up to Everest Base Camp, so she was with me, as did Megan. Mm-hmm. So it was the three of us for 2 weeks. Walking.
How long
through.
Does it take to get to base camp?
It's 11 days of hiking.
Just to the base?
Just to the base camp, yeah.
Wow.
Is that a hard goodbye as they leave you there at base camp and you're going up and they're coming back down? Is that a tearful goodbye or is that how
yeah,
is that
handled? Rough.
Yeah, I bet.
As soon as the helicopter gets out of the way, because they helicoptered out of base camp, and that was terrifying unto itself.
Yeah.
Because it creates a lot of wind and it was already cold. But yeah, when the helicopter rotors, when the whole noise of the helicopter just faded,
yeah,
I'm just looking around going, yeah, that was sad.
This is it.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to spend the next, 50 days here, and they're gone.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that was tough.
This is the most, you're the most interesting man. The world's most interesting
man. Take that, Dos Equis guy.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need that
you're off
anymore.
The map.
Yeah. It's really phenomenal hearing your whole experience. I can't even imagine it. And thanks for painting such a picture.
Yeah, well, thank you.
We will read the pamphlet when it's done.
to read it.
You should write a book. I'm telling you, people want to know this.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to need some help, so maybe you'll have to connect me to somebody.
Encourage other people to do it?
No.
No?
I wouldn't encourage them to do it, no. I would
but
say,
if they
hey,
really
you
wanted
should go
to?
Do Mount Everest. Huh. Because, as you know, everything we've talked about,
right.
You have to really, really want to go do that.
Yeah.
And so you can do incredible things, right? I mean, you can focus and do absolutely unbelievable things, as I just proved. I'm not an athlete. I grew up singing and acting.
Yeah.
And, top of Everest. So, yeah, that's one I wouldn't just openly go tell people to do, because there's some real risk with that. And there's some, physically, that's a truly difficult thing to do. And mentally,
yeah,
it's a truly difficult
if
thing.
If they were doing a production of The Odd Couple at the top of Mount Everest, would you consider it then?
Or Oklahoma.
You said singing and acting. Why aren't you doing Mount Everest the play?
Musical.
Yeah. Mount Everest the musical.
Well, I'll get Megan to help me with that.
Dancing all right. Sherpas? Come on.
Oh,
I can see
people
it all.
Love that.
Yeah. That's what we'll do. Everest the musical.
Acting and singing, anything we'd know you from?
No, goodness, no. I did it halfway through college. One show off Broadway, like way off Broadway. But then I got exposed to what real talent looked like, and I'm like, I'm thinking sales might be better suited for me.
When you were hiking up Everest, did you sing show tunes in your head?
Not on Everest, because you're making real oxygen decisions, but it's funny you say that, because on Rainier, I was driving my team crazy, because I would just bust into Music Man songs, and just launch into 76 trombones at any moment. So
that's
I did do
beautiful.
Oh, that's great.
Great to meet you, Rick. What a story. What an incredible story. We're thrilled that you made it back alive, and more thrilled that you made it here with us. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Good luck
that's
to whatever
cool.
you do in the future, and I hope it's nothing.
All right. Thanks.
A quick break, and then more of us.